Welcome to episode 3 of All of Your Business with Michael Jonas. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of our business owners whose currents rise tides to lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. Today's show is brought to you by Intentional Espresso Company, the mobile espresso and catering cart servicing the greater Portland, Oregon area by serving quality handcrafted beverages. On this episode, we're speaking with Pixie Adams, owner of Moonlight Coffee House. Moonlight is your neighborhood coffee shop where community and creativity merge. All of Your Business is hosted by creator and executive producer, Michael Jonas.
Pixie, how are you?
I'm good.
It's really good to see you. How have you been?
I've been good. I have been really good. 2020 has... It's been a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a lot, I think the world in general, but yeah, 2020 is definitely starting off with a lot of action for sure.
Yeah, I saw this meme that said, I feel like it's January 74th.
I saw one the other day that said, whew, so glad we survived January. It was a long year.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that way too. It's been nonstop. It's also futuristic. We don't really have cars that fly and whatever else.
Yeah, and here what is up with that? We were supposed to have our like flying cars and transporters and stuff by now. Yeah.
Wind turbines first.
Hey, wind turbines and solar power. We're getting there.
Yeah. So I really, really appreciate you being here. You're a special lady. You know? Yeah. No, you do a lot for our community. You work really hard. And you're a very multifaceted person, and, you know, I totally get that. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I get that.
I'm going to take it as a compliment.
Yeah. So I just wanted to first ask you about your childhood. I know that's, like, diving deep.
All right.
Hello.
You're not
going to
waste any time, are you?
Childhood. So tell me about your childhood, you know, how you were raised, what kind of child you were like.
Oh, childhood. Well, I grew up in a very small town in Arizona. If you've ever seen Disney Pixar's Cars.
Of course I have.
Yeah, that's my hometown. It was literally based on my hometown.
Yeah, I've never heard someone say that their hometown was the same as a cartoon.
No, it was literally based on my hometown. Like their art design, instead of sleeping in a cozy cone, you could sleep in a wigwam. They literally have a hotel that is nothing but that. They have old antique cars in front of it. And
wow.
Yeah.
How many people would you say? I mean, is that like 10,000, 20,000?
No, it was like 4,000 people.
Not even.
Yeah. Yeah. My graduating class had 71 people.
Wow.
We had less than 300 people in my entire high school.
Wow. And we figured out earlier that you know our producer, Luke.
Oh, my gosh. We have friends in common, and we grew up super close to each other. Like, we have friends from a nearby town in common. So, yeah, that was really cool. Kind of mind blown.
Nice. So, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have an older brother, and I have a younger sister.
Okay. And are they still in Arizona?
One is still in Arizona in the little town that I grew up in. Actually, she's now raising her kids in the house that we grew up in. And then I have a brother who is in, splitting his time between Washington and New Mexico for work. He works in law enforcement. So he does teaching at an academy down in New Mexico.
Cool.
Yeah. Grew up in a big law enforcement family.
Yeah, what does that mean? Police officers?
I have a family that has a lot of military. The men in my family have a lot of military history, and then went on to police and, you know, all kinds of law enforcement stuff. They move around to different agencies, so, but all within that line of work, and my dad retired doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And I know I asked you this, but I'm going to ask you again. What were you like as a child? I mean, were you, because now, I mean, you do so many different things.
Yeah.
Were you multifaceted?
You know, I kind of always was. I was very goal-oriented, so you pretty much put a challenge in front of me, and I want to do it. I was on the swim team and held records. I had, you know, junior national Olympic qualifying times, and then decided I wanted to get into dance. And then I came into music, and that was my really, really big love. And so I started playing the trumpet really young, and vocal performance, and anything music related. I was obsessed. It was all about it. And then I auditioned and made the Army Band when I was 17, and then decided to take a massive change in life and go into law.
Yeah, and tell us about that. You were a paralegal for a number of years?
I was, yeah. I originally got a secretary job at a law firm with an attorney who, to this day, I'm still really good friends with. He and I were in a community choir together, and he just needed someone who had really strong admin skills, and I happened to line up, and I jumped in and all of a sudden realized that I had a really good skill set, and I was doing victim advocacy work sort of part-time as outside of my working, and that sort of fell right in tandem with the paralegal stuff. And so he ended up putting me through the paralegal program, and then I got my professional paralegal certification, and just I absolutely fell in love with the work. So I got to do that in tandem with, and then go work that into being a victim's advocate full time.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, about being a victim's advocate?
That's
important work.
It's definitely not easy conversation. It's not something you want to talk about over Thanksgiving dinner, but I was the advocate that worked alongside and hand in hand with victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, and I specialized in children. So that meant that I oftentimes was holding space at the hospital while, you know, medical evidence was gathered. That meant sometimes being on scene. There were times where I was actually called in to support law enforcement while the investigation or the crime scene was still active, all the way up through helping for preparation for trial or depositions or those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So preserving chain of evidence and a number of programs that I helped to develop in Arizona to sort of improve the resources and the supports that were available for victims.
So it sounds like, you know, early on you kind of saw the interplay of business and community and law. And
yeah.
They all kind of intertwine, as we know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it was really easy to see the different facets of those things. And one of the things that stood out to me at a really, really young age was that there was this intersection of all of these different components. You know, you had community, and you had volunteerism, and you had government resources, and all of these different things. And it didn't seem like in a lot of the cases that they met at a really good and successful sort of juncture. So that always sort of fascinated me, that it felt like there was something there. You know, if you could find a way to connect all of these different pieces, that suddenly they would integrate better and maybe function a lot better.
And do you think that you do that with your business now?
You know, I sort of feel like I do that in a way that makes my heart happy, maybe less for the success of everything around me, but it seems to somehow work. There seems to be some magic thing. With my business now, I was really determined to create a model that was not 100% focused on the bottom line. You know, business is business, and succeeding at all costs, and, you know, those sort of things just seemed like a very, I want to say, very inauthentic and very artificial way of doing it. And I guess I just looked at it and thought, we could do better. I could do better. This doesn't feel good, I guess, for a simple explanation. I just thought we could do better. So I like to think that I'm getting closer to that. I don't think I have perfected the model, but I'm really happy with where things are.
Yeah. So kind of walk us through, how do you go from victim advocacy and paralegal in Arizona to opening up your own coffee shop in Portland?
I came to Portland when I was pregnant with my third child. My spouse grew up in Portland, and so we had this idea that it would be really great to move here and be closer to family. And not far long after my youngest was born, I had this itching of I want to do something more. I want to have this coffee shop. I want to have a tea shop. I just, you know, those crazy little ideas, they just kind of pop up. And whether it's the insomnia of having a young, you know, new baby at home, or just the craziness of kind of wanting to cultivate this thing, it just it sort of set this idea, this plan in motion that I had this crazy dream. And so fast forward, you know, a few years of planning and researching and trying to figure out how to possibly go about this crazy idea. And I have been saving capital and I've been, you know, putting this business model and this plan together, and I get a breast cancer diagnosis. And it sort of stopped me dead in my tracks. It was 2 weeks after my 33rd birthday. And I knew that I was going to be facing a really, really big battle. And I managed to make it through 2 of 4 surgeries. And my son at the time climbed up onto my bed. And he said, "Mom, are you going to go back to working for a law firm where we never see you?" And again, blame the insomnia, blame the, you know, pain meds or this crazy thing that I just thought, I don't want to not pursue this dream. I don't want to reach my 40th birthday and look back and think I was so close that I missed this opportunity. And I don't want my kids to ever see Mom give up. And so I said, you know what? No, buddy, we're going to do this. And 2 weeks later, I was out beating pavement looking at locations. I found one. I signed on the dotted line. And that was a week before my 3rd round of surgery, and I did renovations after and through that surgery, and I had my last surgery, and 2 weeks later I had my birthday, my grand opening, and I got the phone call that my pathology was clear and I was cancer free. And I have no idea how I managed to make it through all of that crazy, other than knowing that Moonlight literally was the light at the end of the tunnel for me. It was the culmination of all of these things that I had wanted to do. And as risk adverse as I have always been, it was my opportunity to jump in and say, no, like, I want to do this thing, and I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to beat, you know, there's going to be no cancer in my future, and I'm going to have this incredible thing that I get to share with my kids. So, yeah, come full circle in the whole thing. You kind of look back on it and go, holy cow, like, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah, yeah, and you should be proud of yourself, you know. And that's the thing. I mean, well, first of all, fuck cancer, right?
Yes, fuck cancer indeed.
So we have that. And then, you know, someone with a diagnosis or any sort of thing could have just been like, I'm done, guys. I don't feel like opening a coffee shop. Yeah. And then you, I mean, whether it's then or now, you're always like, I feel like crap, but I'm going to do it. And it's going to be big. And I'm going to be creative.
You know, there were definitely some days, I will admit, there was a moment in the middle of renovations that I'm sitting and I was fighting with a contractor and I was in pain and I was taking, you know, massive pain medications, and I just looked around and I broke down and I was like, what in the hell am I doing? And, you know, but I have always been very driven. And you know what? If I put my mind to it and I give you my word, I say that I'm going to do this thing, come hell or high water, I'm going to do the thing. And, you know, I always managed to make it through. And it's been like that every step of the way. There are those, my best friend calls them what the fuck moments, where you're just like, what the fuck did I, what was I thinking? And then when you get all done and you see the end result and you look at that, I literally get to pull up every single morning. I see what I've created and I see the way that it's impacting my community's lives. And I'm like, that's what I was thinking right there.
Yeah. Well, and it's a beautiful coffee shop. And, you know, I love coffee.
I'm
drinking coffee right now. But what I really like about your coffee shop, and this may be why you wanted to make a coffee shop, is, you know, the community component, the conversations, the memories that are had. You have art, you have music. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, there's coffee, right? You want the coffee to be quality, but there's also atmosphere. There's also experiences that are created.
Yeah.
So what's your take on that? Like, how do we take something? Well, I don't want to say simple because coffee's not simple, but how do we take something so ubiquitous and everybody's drinking it, put it in a cup and sell it, and you're selling this whole experience?
I love that you put it that way. I hadn't necessarily thought about it in those terms. That's really beautiful. I think the really nice thing about Moonlight is that you get coffee with heart. And that seems so cheesy. I mean, it seems like a really bad catch line. And no, that's not my tagline. But I love that coffee, for me, growing up, my grandparents were deeply special to me. They helped raise me. And my bedroom at my grandparents' house, my bedroom door was right off the kitchen. And one of the most positive memories I have growing up was that my grandmother would make coffee every morning. And I would wake up to the smell of coffee and hearing my grandma puttering around in the kitchen. And she was my favorite person. And to me, that memory, that profound emotion, that feeling of home that was associated with that, I wanted to try to capture that for people. I wanted to be able to create that. And so my space is something that every single design detail went into that. The counters, the way that they're designed, it feels like an old soda shop fountain where you have these big, long counters where you sit at the counter. The kitchen preparation space is all completely open. The customers get to see how we handle our food. They get to see what we make. Our menu encourages people to come in and to talk to us and interact with us so that we can make something that's special for them.
You have sparkle paint. Don't forget about that.
Yes, my walls glitter. I have to admit, that was probably the most over-the-top ridiculous thing that made my heart happy, and it has been the thing that everyone remembers. I have crystal chandeliers, and everything is, crystal glass and stainless steel, and, we have these beautiful gray walls that have glitter in them, and it's ridiculous, and it's awesome. But you get an opportunity to interact with my staff. My kids are there. I wanted to create something that was more than just customer service. Because let's face it, I mean, we live in one of the coffee capitals of the world. You can do a drive-through coffee shack anywhere. That's easy. But to be able to provide hospitality is something completely different. We have special cups behind the counter for our best regulars. We know what people's drinks are. We know about their families. We ask about their kids, their grandkids, or their great-grandkids. I have customers that come in. I had a set of parents that came in a few weeks ago, and they have a brand new baby who is just terribly fussy and colicky, and they're exhausted, and the minute that they put coffee to their lips, the baby woke up and started to cry, and I thought they were gonna cry, and I was like, please, can I snuggle the baby? And
I thought you were gonna say that you gave the baby a frappuccino or not frappuccino, that's Starbucks, but some sort of latte.
Yes, that would I don't know, probably would have made me happy as a baby. But no, I got to snuggle the baby and visit with them and talk to them. And, that to me, that's what community is about. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm a neighborhood coffee shop. And I love that. There's a lot of heart there. And putting my heart and soul into every part of that then means I get to offer, heart, soul, support, and anything that my community potentially needs that's within my capability. And sure. I just really feel like that's something special. You don't see that, and you generally don't associate that with a coffee shop.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think it's apparent, just walking in that you care. You're not just there for coffee. You would talk to someone. Someone feels like they can come in and say hi to you, ask you how you are. And I think we may be missing that as a culture right now, right? So
yeah,
it's kind of a refreshing. Absolutely. It's a refreshing thing. So tell me a little bit about, I know you had one location, then there was this whole downtown Oak Grove revitalization project that you were part of. I feel like when I talk to you every day, you were talking to a different permit, municipality, whatever that means.
Yep.
So can you tell us about that? How did that all come to fruition that you ended up moving your coffee shop downtown?
That was such an experience. I had only been officially open to full capacity at my original location, which was this little 900 square foot, just cute little hole in the wall. It was a motel at one point, and they had these little cottages, and it was quaint and it was awesome. And people in the community started coming over and saying, hey, you should be part of historic downtown. And I remember the third or fourth time somebody came in and suggested, I started genuinely laughing at people. I'm like, are you kidding? I'm just recovering from my fourth surgery in 11 months. Like, I just got my all clear and I just finished construction. Are you, what? Yeah. No. And then it became this ongoing thing. There were, you know, 10, 12 people a day that were coming in and saying, you really should be part of this. You really should be part of this. And finally, I genuinely started questioning myself. I thought, is this some kind of weird conspiracy? Like, why are all of these people talking to me about this historic downtown? Because it's only a 4-minute drive from where I currently was. And
my question would be, do I have to churn butter? It sounds like one of those old school place visits where, you know, someone's weaving and
right?
making butter.
Yeah, somebody's like got alpaca, and we got, you know, No, I honestly, I had no idea what to expect, and then I ended up, there was someone in particular in the community who is very, very deeply involved in the politics of the local area, has been a huge activist for small businesses and those sort of things, and she came to me and she said, I have been pushing forward to the community that I think that you would be this great fit to come be the anchor and the heart of this downtown rejuvenation. And finally I was like, oh, it was a conspiracy. it was Thelma's conspiracy. But it started the conversations of, you know, what that could potentially look like. And that meant moving my location, that meant splitting my business into the two different aspects of it. And that meant quadrupling the square footage for each aspect of my business. And it seemed like this crazy, you know, once again, standing on the edge of the sort of precipice and like, all right, well, let's jump in with both feet. And it was very much, for the first time, that was very much a heart-led decision. You know, I want to grow. I want to have more space. I want to be able to do more for my community. I was growing. My events were exploding out the front doors. I was putting pop-up tents in my parking lot to accommodate, you know, the people that were coming to these events that I was doing. And it just seemed like the right move. And it took months of renovations. I mean, the building that I'm in is a historic building. It was the station, the trolley station for our area. And the space where the coffee shop specifically is was the post office originally. And I've actually had customers. It's super neat. I have customers that come in and go, you know, I remember coming down here as a kid to pick up my mail or to get stamps. And, you know, so it was months of renovations, and the space is completely 100% to my specifications. Literally, there was absolutely no. We tore out 2/3 of the foundation. I mean, everything in it, electrical, plumbing, it's all brand new.
Yeah.
And so.
And I remember seeing pictures of you, you know, it's not as if you were gifted, you know, a crew of 30. So it was, you
nope,
know.
Nope, no, that was me there
Pixie
late night.
2 a.m. With paint all over her.
Yep, lots of glitter paint everywhere. And yeah, lots of, I tried to be very transparent about at least a good portion of the journey on social media. You know, there is a picture, I didn't even realize that I had done a conference call with someone and I thought I had hung up and I didn't realize it. And I literally just sat and I collapsed and I cried and I was in tears.
And
I was overwhelmed.
They heard all of it.
And they did, and they snapped a picture, and they were really gracious about it. And they sent it to me later, and they said, you need to remember, like, this part of the journey. You need to remember that you literally put blood, sweat, and tears into this place, and it's a part of you. And I just thought, you know, people need to know what this is like. It is not easy. There is nothing about being an entrepreneur or building something like that is easy. It is lonely. It is hard. It's exhausting. And it's rewarding and it's incredible, but those moments, like, that's real. And that's what being a business owner looks like. It was nights away from my kids. It was, you know, being more exhausted than I ever thought possible for the opportunity to stand in front of this thing and say, I did that.
Yeah, and you mentioned your kids. You know, I've met them. They're adorable. But, your daughter... she's like a hippie flower child.
That's my girl. My teenagers, yeah. She's going to be 17 here in about a month and a half.
So how is it, you know, being a mother, not only then, you know, being a breast cancer survivor and opening a coffee shop and being a mother?
I'm so tired, Michael. I'm so tired.
And now. So you were tired then and you're tired now.
I different kind of tired, but yes, absolutely. You know, you talk about being multifaceted, and it's so interesting to me because every single one of those components and those pieces just are a huge part of my heart and soul. And there are some days my kids hate my guts. What do you mean we have to go to the coffee shop? Or what do you mean we have to do the dishes, you know, and trying to help them understand the values that come with business, the values that come with working hard, and, you know, when to put away the electronics and focus on the things that are in front of you and how to have interactions with people. And so it's daunting, for sure. But I, like this last week, perfect example. My son was working on some math problems at the shop, and he was getting super frustrated. And I was trying to sort of walk him through and to explain to him. And my son's on the autism spectrum, so sometimes that makes it a little tricky to be able to navigate certain social interactions. And I had a customer that was at the shop that was in a chair near him who just kind of leaned over and said, "Hey, buddy, have you thought about it this way?" And kind of walked him through in this other way. And it was like, you see this light come on, and my son turns and high fives the guy. He's like, "Thank you. Like, that makes sense. See, Mom, awesome. If I'd have just, you know, if you'd have told me that way." And I, of course, you know, have that moment where I'm like, yeah, okay. Mom doesn't know anything. We got it, buddy. You know, he's coming into teenage life. But,
well, what you just told me, you know, confirms what you said about it being a community. The fact that someone at a coffee shop who doesn't know a young child would give them advice on their math homework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't hear that. That's not going on enough these days.
You know, and I absolutely find it amazing. Yesterday, super cool experience. My daughter, who is vegan, she had made a comment to me about this favorite particular thing that she really likes to eat, that there was no more of it. She had eaten all of it. And so I said, "Oh, I'll have to go, you know, run to the grocery store on the way home and restock her stash of her favorite food that she keeps." And one of our regulars, who comes in 3 or 4 times a week and, you know, is wonderful, disappears after finishing their drink and comes back 10 minutes later and had gone to the store after overhearing the conversation, and shows up and handed it to her. And it was like, you know, those are the moments for me. And of course my daughter, you know, just melts. "Thank you so much, that's so sweet of you, you didn't have to do that." But that to me says that we're building a community. You know, we have a community that looks in on my family and watches out for my family. And I could not be more grateful. It, especially being a single mom, you know, the concept of it taking a village, but sometimes you just, like, how do you build a village? How do you go about figuring that out, especially in a place that I'm not from?
Yeah.
And I have watched the people in my community scoop my kids up and love my kids in ways that just are just astounding to me.
Well, and I know you have done the same, so.
I prefer kids and animals over adults most days, so it's kind of easy.
So, you know, can we talk a little bit about your spouse, your divorce, and life after?
Yeah, that's definitely a big one. I don't think relationships are ever easy. Every relationship is going to go through a lot, and you know, my spouse and I were together for over a decade, and, you know, raising kids together, and we were together in the very, very early stages of my business, and it just didn't survive it. It was just too much, and you know, between cancer and business, and it was one of the unfortunate casualties. And I know that at the end of the day, some things are just supposed to be that way. But I don't, and the ending of a relationship, the ending of any kind of connection, like, that's never an easy one. But it was a huge defining part of who I was for 10 years and a huge part of who I am. And I am so grateful. I'm so grateful for the things that I learned, and it's given me these beautiful children. And, you know, it's definitely been part of the story for sure.
Can we talk a little bit about your spouse? You know, respecting her privacy, obviously.
Yeah.
Your spouse, your, you know, when you were married,
mm-hmm.
Was a man, went through transition
yeah.
to be a woman.
Yep.
And you were supportive along that way.
Oh, hell know? Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. You know, she prefers, I obviously we use female pronouns now that she's made her transition, but it was not always the case. It was much, much later in our marriage, and it was super brave. She had to come forward and say, you know, I want to make this radical change and embrace, you know, this person that I feel that I am and was always meant to be and have not been able to be. And yeah, I didn't even bat an eye. I cracked the joke when she did come out. I said, you know, I have one rule, and it's important. It is a hard limit. And she just, you know, she kind of hung on that. Okay, well, what is it? I said, your boobs can't be better than mine.
That's amazing.
And it took her a second, and she laughed, and then, you know, she started to cry. And it was because for me, you know, when you love a person, you it doesn't matter what happens to the physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, if that is something that a person in my life feels that they need to be happy, hell yeah, do it. You know, what are your goals? What are your dreams? Let's do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was.
Well, and I'm sure she was ready to live her truth. You know,
yeah.
I think that being, there's different levels of support. I mean, that example is extremely strong example of how deeply you're able to love.
I just, you know, I figure if you are going to be with someone and, you know, run the risks of cancer and old age and any of the things in between, I mean, how is that any different? Like, I would hope that someone that loves me and cares about me and, you know, dealing with cancer or any of the stuff that goes along with it wouldn't care. That shouldn't matter. So to me, I've had a lot of people talk about that's an example of being, you know, an ally or a good spouse in those situations. And to me, that's just being a good person. It makes me really sad that there are not more people that have a positive experience and they're coming out like that. So I'm grateful that I was able to do that.
Are there people who weren't supportive who you've kind of had to say, you know, if you're not going to love like I love, I have to let you go from my life?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. I'm fiercely protected. I fiercely stood by her when it came to that, and I'm, you know, there's been a lot of experiences in her world when it comes to that stuff that she did not have. They were not receptive. They were not kind about it. And yeah, I have no problem setting that boundary. You know, to me, you don't have to agree with someone else's choices, but you don't have to be an asshole about it.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that it's really unnecessary. I think it's really brave for our brothers and sisters out there who make the decision to transition or to embrace an identity that is something other than, you know, the trajectory that they have been on since birth.
Sure.
And I think that it's a really incredible thing for people to be able to stand up and embrace that.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I also see people who are going through the process and then they've transitioned and they seem so much more aligned, so much happier,
mm-hmm.
because they can finally be who they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that they have, like you said, that they've lived their life this other sort of way,
mm-hmm.
you know, to please society.
Yep. Yeah, we actually do an event at the shop called the Geeky Girl Game Night, and we open it up specifically to anyone who is female identified. We use that terminology, and it has resulted in some of the coolest ladies coming to my shop that I have gotten to make friends with, and you know, trans women in different stages of, you know, their journey, and non-binary identifying folks who are still wanting to kind of lean into that identity. And I love that. I love that my community knows that that is going to be honored and respected, and that that is welcome. Just, you know, we encourage people. We ask people what their pronouns are. Our name tags for all of our staff all have their pronouns on them to help facilitate that conversation.
Well, and the interesting thing is your coffee shop is not, you know, downtown Portland.
Nope.
Or hipsterville. I guess all of Portland's hipsterville, but you know, you're in Oak Grove, Milwaukee. You know, there are people there that might be conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the lesson is you can still be loving.
Yeah. And you know, we have those conversations. I will lean into those conversations with folks. And I think one of the coolest experiences when you take a demographic that is normally by default not supportive of those kind of identities or those kind of conversations, and because they know better, they know not to be disrespectful in my space, now suddenly they feel like conversations are on the table. They it always starts with the, "Hey Pixie, can I ask a question?" Right? And I'm like, "Yes, let's do this." And I love that. I love that I can be an ally in that way for people. You know, they will come and they will ask certain questions about, I want to ask a person, you know, this, but mm-hmm. how do I do that? And so I actually get to start to educate people and teach people, okay, well, I understand what it is that you're asking, but here's how you can go about it in a respectful way. Or here's something sure. that you never, ever, ever want to ask or should ever ask or say to a trans individual, right?
Well, and what you're talking about is really needed, because I feel like what happens is, I call them liberal offs or progressive offs,
mm-hmm.
where we do this sort of like, you're with me, you're not with me.
Mm.
And there are people who are hateful, right? And then there are people who are loving but on the path of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we immediately shun those people, you know, maybe they don't say the most poetic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not as knowledgeable about any of these issues.
Yeah.
So we sort of need to stop throwing all those people into the hate category, basically. Yeah.
Well, and you also have the category of folks who genuinely want to be supportive. They want to be an ally, but they shut up and they stay quiet because they don't know how to ask. They simple terminology, like teaching them that it is perfectly respectful to say, "What is your name and do you have a preferred pronoun?"
Sure.
Right? Like, that is one of my favorite scripts to be able to provide to people, because they go, "Oh, I can ask that."
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't know that is a good thing, and they don't want to be offensive.
Well, and the most interesting psychological principle, it's easy, right? It's the contact theory. It's walls come down when you actually talk to people and meet them.
Yeah.
So when people realize, you know, trans people, they have a name, they have a story, they have some sort of job, what happens is we sort of, in society, things that are different from us, we label as different or foreign. But had we just taken a little bit of faith and taken a little bit of a leap and said hi, talked to this person, got to know them,
mm-hmm.
We would learn so much. And usually all those walls come crashing down.
Yeah. Well, and I love to be able to go through, being a breast cancer survivor, I make a lot of inappropriate breast jokes.
Let's hear a couple.
It's a thing. For a number of reasons. One, I feel like I have to kind of deal with that situation with some humor. You have to. It's one of my coping mechanisms. But two, it allows people to feel very comfortable. And I've been really fascinated at how easy it is to allow people to understand. You wouldn't come to a breast cancer survivor and be like, "So are your breasts real, or do you have nipples?" Like, that's not something to a random person mm-hmm. on the street that you would be asking. Why would you ask a trans person that? And they go, "Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense." There's this way of being able to look at
sure.
it that is a that prevents someone from being objectified or looked at in a almost non-human way, by being able to go through my own experience with that and being comfortable enough with that to be able to have those conversations. And so I think being able to be so, I mean, for heaven's sakes, I have a t-shirt that has a breast cancer ribbon on it. It says, "Yes, they're fake. My real ones tried to kill me." Right? Like, I put it out there and have no problem having those conversations in a number of capacities. And I feel like that has facilitated the opportunity to connect with people in a way that I don't mind being able to have those conversations.
Well, and you raise a good point about how, you know, we need to be careful. We need to talk about intent, and we need to talk about context.
Yeah.
But we can't always be walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
we can't always be afraid. Nobody's going to ever have conversations. Nobody's ever going to meet or solve issues. So we almost have to take the leap, and we have to talk to people, and we have to make those relationships. Yep. And even with humor, we have a problem with our society now. Like, granted, it has to be the right time mm-hmm. for a joke. You know, now's the time for boob jokes. That's what you told us. But, you know, and you're not going to walk up to someone who is trans and make a trans joke, obviously.
Yeah.
But the point is we need humor as a society.
Mm-hmm.
And we're even sort of getting away from that, where people say, oh, you can't laugh about anything.
Yeah.
And I think that that's wrong. I think that, you know, even after September 11th, you know, of course, it took a moment, but there was humor about that.
Mm-hmm.
There's humor that gets us by, that gets us through pain,
yeah.
that allows us to heal. You know, and when we smile together, we laugh together, we become one as a community. So I think that that's a really important, it's an important message for people out there and for what you're doing, that it's okay to inform and to ask, yeah. and then it's okay to laugh.
And you know, I think you hit something, you hit a point there that was really profound. It's about intent. And it's about consent. So, for example, if someone were to come into the coffee shop and were to crack a joke at me when I don't know them, right? That's a cracking a joke essentially at my expense. Versus if I am eliciting and I am starting the joke, I am making my, you know, hey, look at my superhuman trick, and I jump up and down and they don't bounce, right? Because they're reconstructed. They're artificial.
She has a whole comedy set.
I do. I'm telling you, and it ends with flashlights on the sides of my boobs and they glow in the dark. So, you know, it's this thing. But see, now I can put this out there, right? I can crack this joke and you can laugh at it with me. I've essentially laid the platform.
Sure.
But that comes from me having to be in a very secure place about it, and me exposing a little bit of vulnerability to sit down and say, here, join in this with me. And when you invite people to the table in that way, the human response is spectacular. You find people that will come in and will laugh and find joy, and it's beautiful.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of All of Your Business, featuring Pixie Adams of Moonlight Coffee House. We're going to take just a brief moment and thank our sponsors. Iron Tap Station, featuring 33 taps, filling growlers and pints with craft brews from all over the place. Mention this podcast and get $1 off. For more information, go to irontapstation.com. We also want to thank the Equi Institute, queer, trans, and intersex healthcare. The Equi Institute's mission is to empower and improve the health of the LGBTQQI2S communities of the Pacific Northwest. For more information, visit equi-institute.org. We also want to thank Jane Does. Jane Does is your source for professional organization, professional assisting, and Oregon Mobile Notary Services. Follow Jane Does on their social media platforms at JaneDoesPDX. And now back to our conversation with Michael Jonas and Pixie Adams.
There's a really beautiful story. A coffee shop owner, he's since passed. He was in hospice, and you basically took over his coffee shop, and he was a competitor.
Yeah.
And you didn't do it for, you know, even though you were on CNN and things like that, you didn't do it for the news. You did it because you're a great person. But can you tell us about that, like what that story was?
Ooh, I'm going to totally try to do this without getting overly teary and emotional. So Dave and Tina live next door to my coffee shop, and last year, just over a year ago, they bought a little coffee place that's right down the street from where I am. And I was super excited for them. I mean, this was a venture that, you know, she was working full time. Dave was really involved in volunteer things around the community. And this was, you know, this, they were doing this thing together. And it was really kind of a beautiful thing. And they were so sweet together. And a few months after they bought it, he got a cancer diagnosis, and it was too far progressed, and it was inoperable, and there really was nothing more medically that they could do. And Dave used to come in. He came in, you know, we got his chemo port put in, and he would come to the shop, and he would come to my shop, and, you know, we would talk a lot. And I really adored them. They were really wonderful people and wonderful members of my community. And, you know, there's this constant struggle in owning a small business. There's never enough money. There's never enough resources. There's never enough staff. And Tina was talking about how she was having to be very divided. Dave had come home and was in hospice care, and she was having to try to run the shop and, you know, keep all of these things in the air while the love of her life is literally at home dying. And I said, you know what? I'm going to close my doors. I'm going to come work for you. I will run the shop. I'm going to do this crazy thing. I will put a fundraiser on social media. I will throw all of my social media, like every bit of influence I have behind this fundraiser. Let's get it, you know, you go fund me up, and I will direct all my business to you for the day. And I will try to make some magic. I will tell the community what's going on. I will tell your story, because no one should have to choose between keeping their doors open and spending the final days, weeks, months, whatever, with the love of their life. Like, I can't even fathom having to try to make that choice. And she and Dave were like, what? This is crazy. But they said, you know, we trust you. Do the thing. And they were very gracious about the whole thing. And the night before, one of the local news stations got wind that I was going to do this thing. And they came out and they interviewed me at Moonlight, and then that ran that night. And then the next morning, I remember sitting in front of their shop in my car. I took a few minutes and I was putting together a social media post, and I had this thought of, like, please let me do this justice. Like, please let this be enough. Like, please let me, one, not make a total fool of myself in trying to do this, but please make sure that, like, please let my community step up. And oh my gosh, did the community step up? Oh, we were covered by 8 different news stations that came out just unannounced. I spend the majority of the day while I'm slinging drinks in this little coffee place that is a drive-thru, and we are 6 cars deep in both directions. They never open the second window, and we all day, we had more sales than they had seen the entire year, like leading up to, they had never had sales like that in a single day. I had Moonlight customers that were pulling up and just throwing money in the jar. We had a professionally trained opera singer that showed up and sang for us. Like, I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. They oversold the specialty brew that was part of the fundraiser. The GoFundMe completely funded. And over the next, like, 72 hours, I ended up being interviewed by CNN, The Washington Post, Yahoo News, NBC, ABC, Good Morning America. Now there's a story that's getting ready to run next week. I think it's next week in Women's World Magazine. Like, it's been on radio stations all over the world. I'm getting postcards from people from all over the world just saying we heard on a station or we saw on the news. Like, I'm absolutely blown away. Like, I never, ever imagined that it was going to be what it was. And now Tina and Dave passed away just a few weeks ago. And, you know, Tina has the ability to have staff, and, you know, her overhead is covered. And, you know, she would never, ever have to worry about having to make that decision. And she came by the shop yesterday, and, I'm super, super grateful. You know, the gratitude is just incredible. And, you know, it was an opportunity. I kept telling people, like, why did you do it? And I keep saying, it's supposed to be friendship over business, community over competition. And I like to believe that if the situation were reversed, they would have done the exact same thing for me. And that's what our community should be doing. Our community should be reaching out to other small businesses and loving and supporting each other in a way that they're not competition. I don't care how close in proximity they are. They're a drive-through coffee place that does things differently than I do. And there's more than enough to be able to go around. And if we could just set aside the jealousies, the insecurities, and the worry about the bottom line, you would find that there are incredible people that make this amazing bond. And that to me, like, that's what makes life. That's what makes being in business worth it. That's giving back to my community. That's not me sending positive thoughts and hopes and prayers to a family. Like, that is me stepping up and saying, you know what made the difference for me when I was going through it? Somebody who stepped up and did something. Like, mm-hmm. You have a need. I have the ability to potentially help with that. I'm going to throw my full weight at that. Like, we need to be doing that for each other.
Well, I have no question in my mind about why I chose you as a guest. You are a beautiful human being doing beautiful things, and you're inspiring people, right? This is excellent. And just keep up the hard work.
Well, thank you. I'm incredibly super honored.
Oh, well, I'm incredibly proud of you. So I have these five questions.
Uh-oh.
Also, by the way, we'll give you thoughts and prayers. We'll also give you science and we'll give you facts and we'll give you art. So I have these five questions I ask every podcast guest. The first one is, if you weren't doing this business, what would be the business you would be doing?
I think I would love to do something with adventure. Like, I would love to work with an adventure company of some type, you know, the hiking and, you know, that sort of thing. It's something in that realm, you know, monetize my Instagram so that I can just travel around and hike and make lots of money.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's be influencers.
Let's do it. Michael and I are, I'd hike that. And there it is. It's going to be our new business model.
Yeah. Hashtag same. So the next question is, if you had a celebrity business partner for your business now, who would it be?
Oh my gosh, what a cool question. A celebrity business partner. You know what? This is probably on the surface going to seem like a totally obvious one, but it's way deeper than that. It would totally be Jason Momoa. Right? Like, one, he's beautiful, but can you imagine working with that personality, like, day in and day out? Like, his joy and his enthusiasm and his fun, like, yeah, that
he's,
to
he's
me,
a big
would,
dude.
Like, his heart and, like, oh my gosh, it would be infectious. It would just attract, like, the coolest staff and, like, the coolest team ever. I would just love that.
Yeah, well, maybe we could write him a fan letter.
Yes!
So, if you could form a squad of people, dead or alive... Who would be in that squad?
My grandparents. Oh, my gosh. My grandparents.
I'm sorry. I know you lost your grandma recently.
I did. My grandma was always, like, my biggest supporter. And, I mean, I only lost her a few weeks ago. So she was a huge part of this whole journey for me. She's known about every aspect of it. And she came up and spent a week while I was going through treatment. And so she got to see while things were under construction and all of that. And my grandfather was always the beautiful, like, advice. And he was my biggest believer. So, yeah, I definitely would love the opportunity to, like, rock something out like this with my grandparents. Would be incredible.
Who are you? Your squad or your grandparents? That's incredible. I love it.
They were amazing.
I'm glad that your grandma got to see you making coffee in the morning and puttering around.
She did. I got to go home for Christmas for a week. I had to take my kids home for Christmas for a week, and I got to make my grandma coffee. I got to literally, like, flip the roll, and she, yeah, that
and
was...
She loved it, or she threw it at you?
No, it was a beautiful thing. We used to spend, my grandparents and I used to wake up every morning and sit on her front porch swing, and we would have coffee. And so it was the last morning that I was in Arizona before I left. So it was 5 days before she died. We got to sit on Grandpa's swing and have coffee together. So I would spend the rest of my life doing that every single day, every single day.
That sounds really beautiful. When you reach a certain level of success, what's your splurge or guilty pleasure purchase?
Oh my gosh. Well, last year I bought my Mini Cooper, my little, that was a really big splurge. That was really cool. That's Starlight. She's named. So that was my big one. Michael's laughing at me.
Of course your car has a name.
That's all right. Okay. I have a really guilty pleasure splurge. I want to take a trip. One of my really, really big goals, I want to do more travel with my kids. My kids have never done travel outside of the States. And that is something that I really want to be able to experience with my children. Like that the idea of taking them to see a culture and a place that is so far from what they've grown up and experienced. Like I feel like that would be almost like transcendent for them. Like I really want that.
And the last question, what local or national businesses would you like to give a shout out to?
Oh my gosh, so many. Well, it's funny because immediately, like, your business would be the first one that would come to mind, and like all of the cool community stuff that you've done. So that's sort of a given. I think next I would do Spotlight Around Town. Sherry is doing this incredible new thing where she is featuring hyper local, like very, very small businesses, and she is doing promotion for them, and she is giving them opportunities to speak in front of networking groups, and she's doing all of it with absolutely no cost to the businesses. Like, to me, she is community building in a way that's incredible. She just left her full-time job to be able to pursue this and do this. She's on the board for the Willamette Falls Studio, which provides free resources. There's a second shout-out. Free resources to small businesses to do recordings, to do green screen work and camera work, and you name it. Like, they have all of these resources, and it's absolutely incredible. One of my favorite businesses, my hometown bar, which is across the street from Moonlight, is Vinyl Tap, and owned by two incredible ladies, and they are just as devoted and dedicated to our community as I am. And I am so lucky to have another big business in downtown that loves my community the way that I do. We get to work with them constantly, and they're incredible. And Dave and Tina's Place, be the local coffee company.
You have everything you need, a coffee shop and a bar.
Right. I mean, you know, they get them at night and I get them in the morning. So it works out.
It has been absolutely wonderful interviewing you.
It has been absolutely my pleasure. I love that you are doing this and watching you grow and all of the incredible things that you are putting together. Like, I remember sitting with you after one of your workshops when we first met, like, in person, and you were like, I'm going to do all these things. And I looked at you and I was like, yeah, you are. And here you are. Like, you jump right in, and you are absolutely kicking ass, and it's awesome. And I'm super, super happy for you. You totally deserve it.
Well, thank you. Now we're fangirling each other.
We can do this all day.
Honestly, it means a lot coming from you. So keep up the great work. I'm incredibly proud of you, and you're a shining example of what it means to be a community business owner.
Right back at you.
Big, big thank you to Pixie Adams of Moonlight Coffee House. For more information on all the great things that Moonlight Coffee House is doing, go to moonlightcoffeehouse.com. We also want to thank our sponsors, Iron Tap House, the Equi Institute, and Jane Does. Episode 3 of All of Your Business was brought to you by the Intentional Espresso Company, bringing exceptional coffee and service to your clients and guests. Be sure to visit intentionalespresso.com. And a big thank you to you, our listeners, for checking out another episode of the show. For more information, be sure to go to allofyourbusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to us on your favorite streaming service. All of Your Business is recorded and edited at Track 11 Music in Portland, Oregon.